News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the BC. It is Sunday, the 9th of September, Anno Domini 2007, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we'll be bringing you news, entertainment, questions, answers, stuff. Wake me at one, will you? All right, here we go. Let's start with the obvious news of the week. Apple has unveiled brand new designs for the Nano, Shuffle, and Video iPod, as well as a new touchscreen version, the iTouch, which has kind of a naughty sound to it. The new iPod has all of the cutting-edge functionality of the iPhone, except the phone, including the ability to surf the net. Users will be able to buy songs wirelessly. There's a new color scheme for the Shuffle, as well as a total revamp of the Nano. It's now razor-thin and can play videos for the first time. It looks like somebody took a hammer to the top of the video iPod and just squished it a little.
Yeah, they did that to get the screen bigger.
Exactly. And the screen is now the same size as the one on the video iPod.
No, not
yes.
quite.
You said it was.
The old screen is 2.5. The new screen is 3, isn't it? Let me check my list here.
No, I mean both of the new ones. Well, you check your list, I'll move on. The old video iPod will now be called the Classic, and it will stay the same, but it will have more storage.
The Nano is a 2-inch screen, up 0.5 inch, and the Classic is a 3-inch screen.
All right. It's
the same as before.
The iTunes customer can also ring in the holidays with do-it-yourself customizable ringtones available for a mere 99 cents. Yes, you can buy the entire song for 99 cents, or you can buy a ringtone from the song for 99 cents.
You have to buy both.
But you can't buy the song and rip the ringtone yet.
From Apple, there are several companies, including local company Ambrosia, that figured out how to put custom ringtones in the iPhone already. And then Apple's software update broke that, because they moved where the ringtones are saved. So Ambrosia released an update, so now you can create your own ringtones from your own songs. And that was the big thing that Apple was touting, is when you buy a ringtone from most of the other cell phone companies, you're stuck with whatever piece of the song they picked. When you buy it from Apple, you can pick any piece of the song you want.
That's nice. And so can you when you do it free from Ambrosia.
Right.
Ambrosia, local software company, very smart people.
We've had them on.
Very good people, so we're very pleased that they're doing stuff like that. The iPod 8-gig model sells for $299, and the 16-gig model is $399. There is no 160-gig model,
Of the Touch. See, that's what everyone's mad about. The Classic uses a hard drive, comes at 160 gigs for the $350, or you can get a 16-gig Touch for the same price because it uses flash memory. You know, I want 160-gig Touch because I need more stuff.
Right. But you don't get that. In addition, Apple announced a $200 drop in the price of the iPhone. It's kind of rare that a company introduces a price drop of 33% for something they only introduced 3 months ago, at least not without porking off the early adopters. Can you imagine having paid $600 for an iPhone, then finding out if only been a little less fanatic about your love of all things Apple, you'd have saved yourself $200 in a rare marketing blunder.
Out overnight.
Yeah. In a rare marketing blunder, when he was asked about that, Jobs said, that's the way it is with technology. Eventually, in a sop to those early adopters who had always been Apple's bread and butter, they gave them a $100 in-store credit.
Was that his flight way of saying kiss off?
Yeah, basically, you know what? That's what happens. Get over it. Suck it up.
Well, and it would have happened eventually, and everyone that bought their iPod the day before the price drop, their iPhone the day before the price drop.
But in this case, it's everybody.
Everybody. Two months before.
Right.
But we've been seeing this in our industry for years. I mean, so it's not something new. I mean, they had a commercial. And they show this guy going home in his convertible. He's got this brand new
T5.
Computer. And as he's going home, he's going by this billboard, and there's the T6.
Yeah, they're just putting up the T6 billboard.
I have, for years on this show, announced when I was buying a new computer so all of you could wait another 3 months and buy a better model for the same price. I believe that's a public service I provide, and I don't get enough credit for it.
Yeah, a lot of people were calling it the early adopter tax. Yeah, so you got 2 months use out of your iPhone before anybody else. And Apple does have a, in fact, people were, before Jobs said they're issuing a $100 credit, if you go into the Apple online store, that they were able to go to AT&T, who is the carrier for the cell phone, and were able to get a discount from them. So now I'm wondering if those same people will go back to Apple and get another discount.
Now, here's my next question, however. I don't know if any of you have played with the new iTouch yet. I have not.
It's not going to be released until the end of the month.
Well, yeah, I know. That's exactly right. No, I know the general public hasn't released it yet. But here's the thing. When I bought my iPod, knowing nothing about it, right, in about half an hour, I could change songs, pause, skip, without ever looking at the thing, hanging it off my belt. Can you even do that with the iTouch? And how hard will that be, and how long will it take you to learn it?
That's one of the complaints about the iPhone now, because the iPhone is also an iPod.
Right.
When you're playing the phone and want to skip to the song, you have to touch the next song button, which you can't find without actually seeing it.
Right.
With the iPod, you know it's the right side of the screen, or the left button, or the left button. So what some people are saying that Apple should, while it's in iPod mode, make sort of the entire side of this left side of the screen be previous and the entire right side be next, so that you don't have to look at the screen while you're driving to change the song.
Right. And what about the visually impaired, for whom the iPod is a huge benefit,
especially with the audiobooks and all the audio on it. Right. Now there's no real way for them to use an iPhone. And, of course, that's one of the lawsuits. There's 5 or 6 different lawsuits that have popped up against Apple over the iPhone. Most of them are the battery, that you can't change the battery yourself. Well, it says that on the box.
I had no intention of ever buying an iPhone, and I still knew that.
But one of the potentially legitimate lawsuits is that it does discriminate against the visually impaired, and whether that's legal or not is going to be the question, because it is illegal to discriminate in certain areas. In fact, there's a similar lawsuit about their stores. Apparently, a woman in a wheelchair tried to buy something at an Apple store, and all of their shelves are up higher, so someone who's standing can see the screen really well,
right?
But someone who's forced to be in a wheelchair can't.
Right.
So she's suing them over that.
I had that problem in RIT. I gave a presentation, and as part of it, for the humorous portion, I played some videos off of YouTube. We all scream for
iTube. Well, it is iTube. Apple and Google are getting so much together now. It might be iTube.
It'd be iTube pretty soon. But only one of the three was captioned. And I heard about that.
Yep.
And I said, I have no control. I can't. Well, I had an interpreter there.
Mm-hmm.
But even so, and I agree. Yep. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. We have some folks on the phone. We will get to them when we come back. It is 14 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites on 1180 WHJM. Everybody, I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
You know, with that music, though, you should be playing one other tune. Did you see what I put on the screen before?
Now, see?
Uh-huh, see, you gotta wake up in there.
Well, you know you've made it when you have your own theme, you know what I'm saying?
That's
I'll probably get yelled at,
I have my own
theme. It's actually labeled in the computer the Nick Francesco theme.
Well, see? Theme Boy here also has a birthday tomorrow.
Yes. Tomorrow is my birthday.
You're going to be?
You don't look 25.
That's exactly right, because I will be 57 years old.
Damn.
You're still older than I am.
Yep.
You're old. You are old.
Yeah.
Old, old, decrepit, old, ancient,
only
old.
Only 2 years older than you.
That's right. Well, no, 3 as of this moment.
Yeah, 3 right now.
All right.
No, wait a minute. You are going to be
57,
and I'm still only 58.
Oh right, yeah, right. You're still old,
and I'm still younger compared to all you old farts.
Here's an idea. Shut up,
Nick. 57's the year I was born.
Thank you. Oh, we already paid for this, so it's all right. Play it.
Yeah, was it 2 little old ladies in Jersey?
Yeah, so that's the rumor. I don't think that's true. Go to Snopes, you'll find out. Thank you. I don't understand these people who shave, you know, shave years off their age. I fought hard to get here.
Yeah.
I fought dang hard for 57 years to be here today, and I'm proud of every minute of it.
Age is just mind over matter.
Yeah, and if you don't mind it,
don't matter.
Exactly. We don't care about that. Let's go to the phones. Our next caller is Ed. Our first caller is Ed from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Ed. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen. It'd be wonderful if wisdom and age went hand in hand, but unfortunately that's usually not the case.
Ain't that the truth?
And going back to these price decreases, I mean, I was totally baffled that people would go out and spend $600 for a cell phone with a fancy graphics interface on it when they could have gone out and bought themselves for a nice halfway decent laptop for $400 or $500. It just boggles my mind. Even if they take a couple hundred dollars off of it, at $400, you're right in the price of a nice starter laptop.
Well, that's
even on the world market, the laptops that they're supposedly developing for kids out there, they're going to supposedly mass produce for $100 a piece. Now, you consider the electronics, the component, the plasma screen, or all the other technologies involved. If you can produce something as large as a laptop, I mean, how good of a value is that tiny cell phone?
They're going to be extremely subsidized because of the lower price. But also, they are big and heavy, and that's the reason people like PDAs and cell phones, because they are so much smaller. And there's nothing really too unusual about $600 for the iPhone. The Nokia N95, which is a similar phone, is $950. Most of the high-end smartphones like that are in that price range. You know, the irony and the annoyance for everyone is that within 2 months, the price dropped. And that's unfortunately very, very common in the consumer electronics world as well. I have a laptop, but I don't like carrying it with me all the time because it's big and heavy, so I carry a small iPod.
Of course, you see that throughout industry. No matter what a product is being offered, you usually see a price decrease or some special offer down the road. But it still baffles me that the high prices that they introduce the new technologies for, when you can see comparable components. Devices out there at much lower cost that aren't subsidized.
Well, that's the people who buy the Jaguars or whatever car and then drive it in the city.
Hmm? Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you spend that much money on a car that's going to get dinged and bumped at, and you know, why drive it in the city?
I mean, as opposed to taking it out, you know, in the country. And
as a touring car, yeah.
Right.
A lot of the cost of a brand new device is the engineering cost. You know, say it took them.
They're recouping their losses.
It took them $100 million to develop it, and they know they're going to have to recoup that in the first 6 months or so.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I agree with that part of it, but going back to just looking at it, I mean, here you've got a small screen TV in your hand. Now, would you rather watch a movie on something that's say 2.25 inches diagonal to a nice, you know, 52-inch screen at home or something?
See that screen just as clearly as the big one.
And when I'm sitting at the doctor's office waiting for my appointment to come up, I can't have my 52-inch monitor in front of me.
Right.
Oh no, but I'm sure you would appreciate.
Well, the big thing though here is that there are always going to be early adopters, and I say God bless them because they're paying for the R&D. So when I finally buy one, it's a reasonable price.
Mm-hmm. Now, it was an excellent thing for Apple to turn around and offer that $100 rebate. That was good that they did it beyond a 30-day
period.
That
was nice.
That was good for the consumer.
That's one thing a lot of people missed is that Apple does have a regular, you know, return policy, and so they were giving people credit who bought it within, I think it's a 14-day policy. So if you bought it within 14 days, you could have returned it and bought the new one so they gave you the price difference. It's the people outside the regular return policy that got upset.
Right, and they're the ones who have the $100 rebate now, and they're happy. All right, and thank you very much. I appreciate your call. Our next caller is Bob from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Okay, I have the EMAC blues right now. I have an EMAC that, in almost all aspects of operating it, has slowed way, way down. With the bouncing balls, if I go to, for instance, drag a file across the screen, it might take 10 or 12 seconds for it to catch up. If I go to open a folder, it might take a minute and a half before it pops up.
Are you hearing any odd noises from the computer?
Odd noises at all. Everything sounds fine.
Hmm. Have you run into the diagnostics that came with?
No.
That's the first place to start. In your utilities folder, there's a disk utility. There's two diagnostics in there. There's verify permissions and verify disk. if you can repair your permissions, and that can fix certain problems. If verified disk comes back and gives you errors, then that can really tell you why the machine was slowing down, because there's errors on the disk. Then you'll have to boot your system disk and let it run the repair disk option. And then lastly, there's an Apple hardware test disk that came with the computer that does a full low-level hardware diagnostic as well. The other two things to check out is how much memory you have in the computer and how much free disk space you have. We were just talking about that before the show. Your hard drive fills up over time and you add more. And when you have too little free disk space, it makes the computer work harder because it doesn't have enough scratch space. So generally, you try to keep about 10% of your hard drive free for scratch space.
It's there. It has at least 10% free. Yeah.
Yeah, so try those three diagnostics, and if that doesn't help, you may need to take it into a shop.
Yeah, I hate to have to give that answer, but it's often the only one that works. All right, we are going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, who is once again generously contributing his time, his talents, and his abilities to record the show for us. And, of course, Mr. Rob Linton, who has taken time off from his yacht in the Caribbean to show up here to run the board and do all the important things that keep us on and running. I'm Nick Francesco. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with the greatest computer show in the known universe at 27 minutes after the hour. You are listening to Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. So stay tuned, call in, tune in, and don't drop out. Yes, I'm a child of the 60s.
Jug band, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Dr. Teeth in the Electric Mayhem.
That's right. Animal. What a great show. What an utterly great show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Teeth in the Electric Mayhem with John DiTullio on vocals.
Is that you? Is that me?
That's me.
I'm in here going, oh, my God. What?
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 33 minutes after the hour, we've already completely lost all semblance of control.
That's right. We're all a mess.
Yes, exactly right. All right. Microsoft is releasing fixes for holes that could lead to system hijacking in Windows, Messenger, and Visual Studio. Microsoft is planning to release 5 security bulletins on September's Patch Tuesday, or as I call it, Microsoft's monthly visitor. While only one, a vulnerability in Windows, is deemed critical, 3 of the advisories address vulnerabilities that can lead to system takeover. The Windows flaw, flaws in MSN Messenger and Windows Live Messenger, and holes in Visual Studio. Those of you waiting for a fix for a flaw in SharePoint that could let a malefactor take over your entire system, nothing for you. You'll just have to keep waiting and hope nobody catches you. The IM client vulnerability in particular should be given priority, experts say. If the Windows Messenger vulnerability lends itself to a chat-based attack vector, then organizations and users of the ubiquitous Microsoft Messenger should pay attention, because this would be a prime candidate for spreading malware and viruses, said Paul Zimsky, the Senior Director of Market and Product Strategy for PatchLink, in a statement. The EI zero-day tracker is currently listing 3 unpatched Microsoft vulnerabilities, but none of these are rated critical. While September 11th may strike some as a patch late Tuesday, experts warn that any vulnerability that could lead to remote code execution should be dealt with quickly. Although this month may be a reprieve from this year's heavy patch releases, any vulnerability that lends itself to remote code execution should prompt IT administrators to identify which parts of their network are affected and to apply those patches first. Indeed, Zimsky said, finding systems vulnerable to the threat at hand will be the toughest part of dealing with this month's patch deployments. At any rate, whatever breathing room IT administrators get from having a less than onerous patch Tuesday should be spent cleaning house, he said, updating network inventories, addressing backlog vulnerabilities, classifying assets, prioritizing risk, and measuring recent response time for patch implementation. As it does every month, Microsoft will also be releasing an update to the Microsoft Windows malicious software removal tool. The company also plans to release one high-priority non-security update on Microsoft update, but none released on Windows update. So don't forget patch Tuesday. I generally tend to wait till patch Wednesday and let other people get the arrows in their backs, and we move on from there. So,
Nick, didn't you read that same report last month
on the month
different
before.
Dates?
Yeah, right. With more and, or fewer
slightly different fixed numbers, and
yeah, but exactly.
Now that's what Skype originally blamed all of their outage on last month.
Yeah,
that the patch Tuesday came out and 100 million PCs rebooted at exactly the same point.
Yep.
And the Skype's peer-to-peer, you know, voice over IP network went down because it couldn't handle the sudden influx of 100 million computers logging back in.
Suddenly, the sound of 100 million computers screaming in agony.
Yeah.
I still don't trust things like Skype because there are things like vomit. Voice over misconfigured internet telephones. It's a program that if you are on a non-secure line, like you're at an internet cafe or whatever, right, a coffee shop or whatever, and you're going over the wireless, I can suck all your packets out of the air. This vomit program does it automatically, sucks all those packets out of the air, finds all the ones that are involved in the internet telephone call, reassemble them in the correct order, and then turn it into a WAV file so you can listen to the actual conversation.
See, a lot of this, you know, reminds me of the early days of portable phones when they got so popular in the houses. You'd have your base station, then your little portable phone. Well, it's a radio. And that also happened to be the days that scanners were really, really popular.
Right, right, right.
And it's very easy to listen to a conversation on a portable phone.
Yep.
There was an update to the Telecommunications Act in the 1990s. Don't ask me the exact date. But it said right in there, right in the law, right in today's U.S. code, anytime you're talking on any device that is not connected by wire, you're not secure. You're not guaranteed any privacy whatsoever.
Duh.
And even when it is connected by wire, there are legal wiretaps and then, of course, illegal wiretaps that you can still be recorded.
Right.
So you cannot guarantee privacy, period.
Right. Absolutely right. Oh, before we go on, I want to talk about our parent company, Clear Channel. Clear Channel Radio will soon offer high-definition digital radio broadcasts on Apple iPods as part of the computer company's Apple iTunes service. Through Polk Audio's iSonic Entertainment System 2, Apple iPod users will be able to listen to as well as push a button to purchase songs broadcast in HD digital radio. Clear Channel Radio has been working to make HD2 multicasts available through its terrestrial radio stations. Wham! Is an HD station. We have the ability to be heard in HD.
I always get a kick out of that, terrestrial radio stations. Like there's an extra terrestrial radio station.
Right. And we're not terrestrial to begin with. If the carrier wave ran through soil, we would be a terrestrial radio station. Actually, Nikola Tesla was doing that, sending radio waves through the ground and sending power through the ground.
And there are such things as underground radio antennas.
Right, exactly. But most of them aren't. And so I don't know that terrestrial radio, those are true terrestrial radios.
You know the interesting thing about HD radio? It's not taking off as well as everyone would have liked.
Because you have to buy a new box.
You have to buy a new radio. They're expensive, right. And they're not really that good of quality yet.
Yeah.
Well,
speaking of new boxes, I got suckered into the, my wife actually, we just moved. And so we called a cable company to move our cable service. And for $5 a month, why don't you try digital cable? Okay.
Right.
So now I'm hooked. BBC America.
Yeah.
I just watched Torchwood last night. All the extra G4 now. You know, really cool technology show out of Canada. So now I might not want to give it up.
Yeah, exactly.
When it goes back to the full price.
Exactly.
Which is their plan to begin with.
Right. So you'll soon be able to get. It seems that they're first going to start with the FM stations, which are really broadcasting music. And that's more what it's all about. But yeah, a friend of mine was saying, and he is an audiophile, and he was saying, oh, great, so I can buy an HD radio, which makes my AM sound as good as FM.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
And FM sound as good as CDs. That was their marketing for a while.
And that's the thing. I mean, everyone's going on this. We've got so many channels because, you know, you have your primary over-the-air old-fashioned AM or FM radio station. Then you add on HD to it, and you've got, okay, that same channel in HD. Then radio stations are expanding to offer streams and streams and streams of just whatever.
We've seen the right. same,
isn't it the same stuff that you're getting on the other channels?
Well, some of it is, and some of it's, they'll show the same show at a different time, which is nice.
Right.
And we've seen the same thing in the digital broadcast television, you know, of the local TV stations. Most of them have extra channels. So they can show different things at the same time and just have more bandwidth.
Well, you know, people ask a lot of times, they ask me, you know, what's this deal with HD? And it's just like, wait, let the first round of, you know, things, you know, go through. And
February 16th, 2009, my wife's birthday by coincidence.
All, so it's her fault.
It's all her fault. All analog transmissions will stop.
No. False.
Television,
right.
Analog television transmissions right. will stop, and you will then need to buy a digital converter box to convert the digital signal to your analog TV, right. or you will need to buy a digital television. Mm-hmm. This has been known for years and years, and they keep pushing the dates out. So it's everyone who's looking at new TVs now are getting a digital-capable TV. The big question that I got asked the other day...
I bought a TV and I can't tell you how many years now.
The big question I got asked the other day is what about analog cable? Is that still going to... still continuing? It's because it's just analog broadcast stations.
By that point,
I don't want to have to buy a digital box on all of my analog TVs.
Well, yeah, but I mean, by that point, I mean, isn't Time Warner, for example, got pretty much all digital boxes out there? I mean, is there analog cable?
It's an extra subscription,
right?
For
which
the
you have
digital
to pay
box,
for.
Which is what I don't want to do. You know, on my big TV, I'll pay for it because that's the stuff we watch. But on the little TVs, my son's TV, you know, we don't need all the extra stuff.
You don't need 850 channels,
right?
Well, you know, the HD.
Yeah, but they're not. I'm sorry, but they're not 850 channels. It's 112 channels repeated 15 times. Tell me I've got 850 channels when four separate stations are the Discovery Channel.
And half of them are shopping channels.
Right.
And half
exactly.
of them are shopping channels.
100 shopping channels, 100 music channels, 100 Fix Your House channels that my wife is now addicted to.
Of course she is. And I am not a big sports fan, so there's an entire gigantic block in the middle of the dial that I cannot, for the life of me, imagine why I would stop.
Well, the difference in the 300s is a few in the 500s, the military channel, the extra Discovery channels that you don't get all the time.
Right.
Well, the interesting thing about it is what people don't seem to understand is radio and television stations are not here to entertain you. We are merely just filler between commercials.
Right.
Really, I mean, that's what it comes down to. You're talking commercial radio, commercial television. That's the way it is. And now, you know, these cable companies with 800,000 channels, of, you know, it's just more channels to sell.
Right.
You know, so it's crazy business.
And we were talking about how back, you know, when I was a kid and we had to chisel televisions out of rock.
Three channels, ABC, CBS, and NBC.
Right.
I remember when the fourth channel came on and, because I was just a kid. Wow, another channel.
right.
WUHF. And it was mostly kid stuff, too.
right. Yeah, right. And that's where we saw, you know, Thriller, the evening monster movie on Saturday night.
Wait, Buffalo, we got Ultraman.
There you go. Oh, Ultraman. I loved Ultraman.
How about when the remote was? Your parent told
remote.
You to get
go
up
and change the channel.
You were the remote. That's right. Because you were the young legs. Hey, you get up and change
now
the channel.
That annoys me. And my new digital cable box is 47 cents a month for the remote control.
Yeah. Well, you can buy your own.
Yeah, but that's $10.
Hey, Steve, repeat that date on the digital conversion for television again. Somebody asked.
I'm checking to make sure it's still that day because they keep pushing it off.
It keeps being pushed,
February 16th, 2009.
So right now, that's what it is. But chances are as we get closer.
And actually, there was a date last year in 2006 that all new televisions that have a tuner must have a digital tuner. So when you're shopping for a television, you're going to find some that look too cheap. That's because they have no tuner in them. Some of the TVs will have an analog tuner and a digital tuner. Some of them end up with no tuner, which makes them cheaper because they assume you're going to put a cable box on it or a satellite box on it or a TiVo box
on
it.
You get a Switch 3 and 4.
Yeah.
That's all you got, right.
So be careful when you're buying a new TV if make sure there's a tuner in it if you're not going to get a digital cable box.
All right, we have Ron from Avon or I don't care, who has a comment. Ron? Oh. Nice comment, Ron. I could have made that comment myself.
Hang on. Let's try again. It's this HD radio here. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Ron, is this really you this time?
Yeah, right.
Okay, what's your question?
I was in Walmart yesterday, and they had a TV. It's a digital analog. It's got a tuner. It's got HD. $268 for 27 inch.
Yeah, the small ones are really, really cheap. It's the really big ones you want on the wall.
No, it's a flat panel screen.
Yeah, the flat panels, yeah.
And how big was it?
27 inch.
Yep. Mace you.
Well, here's the thing, though. They're selling these TVs now without tuners, if you've noticed.
Well, that's what he did. Yeah,
he just said, okay.
Well, the other problem now is that digital cable television, digital broadcast antennas are still free TV. Mm. Digital cable television is encrypted. And even if you don't rent the digital cable box from the cable company, you're going to need to rent a cable card that you plug in to your digital television. So you want to make sure your digital television has a cable card slot so you can receive digital cable.
And even at that, I don't believe you get all the channels, all the premium channels and stuff, do you?
Right. You need the cable box for the pay-per-view and a lot of the extra channels.
Right. Okay, so, thanks, Ron.
I got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
On your DVDs and that, they have plus and minus. At one time you said which was better. I think minus, right?
Depends on how you define better. Minus is most compatible with other devices. So if you're giving a disc to someone, plus has a greater capacity, especially the Plus RDL has the 8 gigabyte capacity. So minus is better if you're giving it to someone. Plus is okay if you're keeping it yourself.
All right, we need to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Wright, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 47 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And in 53 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. All right, kiddies, it's that time once again. Go get your footy jammies on. Grab your mug of Ovaltine. Sit in Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair. And if we can slap him awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Hmm?
Time for Story Hour.
Hmm?
Here's your meds. Time for Story Hour.
All right. Ugh. Well, this one, I've been in business over 15 years. I've been doing computers longer than I care to think about.
Because you're old.
Thank you. Yes, I am, and I deserve every day of it, too.
Yes, you do.
But, you know, I had an interesting situation, though, this week in the shop. Somebody came in and wanted to know why I charge a diagnostic fee. And it's like, well, wait a minute, because they just want me to quick check it out. And it's like, yeah, but then I got to get something for it. Well, why? If it's broken, you should be able to quick tell. Not always. And, you know, if you decide to go with the repair, if I can fix it, then the diagnostic fee is taken off of it. But if it doesn't, you know, I've wasted some time on that piece of item that you brought in that you want me to check out. And they said, well, why should I have to pay for that? If it's broken, you just go ahead and throw it out. Well, no, that's your piece of equipment. And if it's broken, you know, you decide what you want to do with it.
Our time is valuable. We should be paid
and
for it.
I could be working on somebody else's machine that wants theirs fixed because of something minor. But you want me to take the time away from them to work, just quick look at yours and not get compensated for it. And that's where a few of them are having an issue. And it's like, well, then too bad.
Yeah, we have some abandoned computers in our shop that they won't pay the diagnostic fee. So you take your fee up front. We
yes.
have a problem that since we
Excuse
do Apple
me.
Warranty service, the first thing we have to decide if it's warranty or not. And they don't want to pay for it if it might happen to be warranty.
Well, I get up right up front because I got stuck too many times. I'd sit there and say, well, all right, you can come pick it up and it's, you know, not worth fixing. Well, just throw it out. Well, you always, oh, I ain't going to pay for it. It's not working. It's like, oh, forget it. I started collecting it right up front. And if you don't like it, then go somewhere else because one, I ain't filling my dumpster with your junk.
Which is illegal. You have to take it to a hazardous waste reclamation facility.
They'll say, well, just throw it out. No, you can't. I'll get fined.
Yeah, there are hazardous chemicals in computers, especially monitors. What, 6 pounds of lead in a monitor,
the
a CRT?
Yeah.
And you have to take it to either a hazardous waste reclamation center or a computer recycling center. Rochester Computer Recycling and Recovery, they have an office on Central Ave downtown. And then on Victor, they're like a mile from our office, so that helps us a little bit.
Yeah, right.
They will take in your computer. There's a fee to recycle heavier stuff. Lighter stuff is free. They strip it to the components and recycle it properly.
Yeah, so don't get upset, folks. You know, when you come in and you wanted something tested, yeah, we'll do it. And the same thing, and I always stand behind. If you decide to go with the repairs, I take that fee off of the bill. So, you know, you're not really getting hosed. No, I got to be paid for my time, too, to look at it.
Uncle Dave, there's something else you might remind them. that they are, in effect, renting every tool and every piece of equipment in your shop for the period of time it takes
including
you to do
your
that,
brain.
That diagnostic.
Yeah, it's you know, $5 for the part, and it's $100 for the knowledge of where to put the part.
Well, I get that at Public Market. We have a coffee stand at the Public Market, Flower City Coffee. Constantly, people are stopping. Can I ask you a computer question? Not now. There's 15 people behind you who want coffee, and that's what I'm here to sell. And they get angry. Well, I just have one question, and 15 people want to buy coffee. I'd rather sell a pound of coffee to each one of them than answer your question. I'm sorry. It's just the way it is. When I'm standing in line at Wegmans and when I'm at the movie theater and when I'm walking down the street and when I'm in Blockbuster and Hollywood Video and people come up and ask me questions, I always answer them. But when I'm trying to actually do something else, I'm trying to make money for my family and you interrupt me from that, it makes me a little porky.
And virtually every other industry charges for diagnostic service. In fact, sometimes they'll charge you more to come to your house. But and I always have to be wary. You hear the commercials about free diagnostics. Well, they're going to find something wrong. Yeah, so to make you pay for the diagnostic time.
Yeah.
Probably, yeah. I don't know for sure. That's my own opinion. But
Yeah, right. Opinions expressed on this show are those of Steve Ray and no right-thinking human being. I'm still in trouble with my... Or perhaps my ear. You could be right. I'm just old now. Perhaps I need to spend a couple
mine
hours
aren't.
Peroxiding my...
And I'm older.
Peroxiding my ears. Well, that's...
Well, I had... we'll put Dave's story hour away. I had an interesting problem this week. Had a customer. Their ISP was telling them that they were sending out spam and were going to shut them off and cancel their service because it had been like a week. ABG couldn't find it. Norton couldn't find it. Clam couldn't find it. Kaspersky found it.
Wow.
But couldn't remove it. AdAware 2007, the newest version,
right,
could remove this mass mailing Trojan.
Wow.
But only in safe mode.
Wow.
That was a nasty one.
Yeah, that was nasty. All right, we are going to take a quick break. We will be back on the other side of it all. It is the top of the hour, and I'm sure something exciting will happen. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you at 27 minutes after the hour. You are indeed listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe. When we come back, we'll have the poll. We'll have more of your questions. We'll get it all done on Soundbites, which, of course, is only available, well, on the web and as a live stream and on the podcast on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour, leaping into our 18th year of broadcasting. It's Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, every week we do a poll on our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Last week, the question was about iTunes. As you may remember, NBC has dropped out of the iTunes music, whatever they call them, store, I guess.
But they're now they're on the Amazon's Unbox or whatever they call it.
Right. 256 of you voted, making it number 245 on the all-time hit list. Thanks to all of you. The choices were who cares, wait, you can get video on iPods, and no, con. And the overwhelming majority of you, as I suspected, said who cares. 88% of you said who cares. 9% of you said, wait, you can get video on iPods. And only 9 of you thought it was a horrible, horrible, horrible thing. This week's poll comes from an editorial I read in Computer World from a guy named Mike Elgin. He posits, don't look now, but the role of the industry's biggest bully is increasingly played by Apple, not Microsoft. 10 years ago, Microsoft was the company everybody loved to hate. The most vociferous Microsoft haters slammed the company for being a greedy industrial bully that uses monopolistic, clunky, copycat operating system to force software on users and coerce partners into unfair licensing deals. Don't look now, but the role of the industry's biggest bully is increasingly played by Apple, not Microsoft. Here's a look at how Apple has shoved Microsoft aside as the company with the worst reputation as a monopolist, copycat, and bully. Apple the monopolist? People love iPods, but iPods come bundled with iTunes. Want to buy music from Apple? Guess what? You must install iTunes. Want an Apple cell phone from AT&T? Yep, iTunes is required, even if you only want to make phone calls. Want to buy ringtones for your Apple phone? iTunes. Apple not only bundles iTunes with multiple products, it forces you to use it. At least with Internet Explorer, you could always just download a competitor and ignore IE. Another clue that a company has monopoly power is that you find yourself suffering sticker shock. That shock rippled through the iPhone enthusiast community yesterday when, this is a little early in the week, when Jobs announced with a straight face that iPhone ringtones based on iTunes would cost the full price of the song plus 99 cents extra. What?
It's probably not Apple's idea, though. It's probably the music company's idea.
The full song costs 99 cents. How on earth can Apple seriously charge the same amount again for the ability to hear just 30 seconds of the song, the same length as the free iTunes samples? And, of course, there's the whole iPod pricing fiasco. 10 years ago, Microsoft haters complained that Windows followed the Mac OS to market as a graphical user interface, copying Mac's features, such as folders, trash cans, resizable windows, and other elements. But who's innovating now? The LG KE850 was winning awards for its full-screen, touchscreen, on-screen keyboard before Jobs even announced the iPhone. And, of course, Apple the bully. Microsoft used to be the big bully, pushing everyone around and dictating terms to partners. Meanwhile, Jobs has suddenly become the most feared man in Hollywood, bragging Thursday about Apple's scary dominance in digital media sales. Although full details haven't been revealed, NBC apparently wanted more flexibility to charge higher prices for its TV shows on iTunes. Apple said no, and NBC was sent packing. Jobs rules like Bill Gates never did. If you want to succeed in the digital music or downloadable TV business, you'll do things his way. So that brings us to the question of the week. Who's the biggest bully in the computer industry? And I pick not just Apple and Microsoft, but also Canonical, Dell, and Red Hat to give you as many choices as humanly possible, because that's the kind of guy I'm. So far, 85 of you have voted. Microsoft, unsurprisingly, is the biggest bully so far, 78% of you. 16% of you say Apple, 5% say Dell. Red Hat got a vote. Canonical got nothing from nobody, no way, no how. When you're done voting, check out the little yellow box underneath. Click on Give Us Your Opinion, and it takes you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Yes, sir. And you will be able to give an opinion up to 255 characters. And you'll be able to put in whatever little comment you want, and we'll put that online. Keep it clean, and don't be any sillier than you have to be. While you're there, please check out what I do. I put out a newsletter. I've restarted the newsletter. I was lax for a while. There's no reason to tell you what that was all about. But I'm back now. The newsletter will be back online. The forums have always been active. If you're a member, you can search through all the newsletters I've put out, hundreds of tips and tricks and rants and raves and websites and answered questions. You can search through all of them for the answer to your question. It's only $15 a year, so check it out as you go along. And then come back to our website at soundbites.org and see some of the coolest things that are out there.
One of the interesting things is that Apple isn't bullying other computer companies as much as they're bullying the media companies to let us download songs from the internet, let us, you know, use where we want with our music. So it's kind of interesting that they're bullying, but it's a little bit in a good way. Just a little bit. just a little bit.
Yeah. Okay, then. Well, I think that's an interesting, that's an interesting topic, because the real question is, and we already touched on this, if Apple is dictating pricing and size and everything else, for example, you can't buy an iTouch with a 160 gig drive.
Right.
So the choice is you buy an iTouch with a 16 gig drive, which annoys you because you can't put enough music on it. Or you buy something else with a 160 gig drive, which annoys you because it's not an iTouch.
It doesn't have internet on it. Yeah.
And it doesn't have internet on it.
Or I have to carry my big computer around.
Right. Yeah. That's why a lot of people are looking so carefully at some of the new form factor PCs that are starting to come out. The very, 7-inch screen, whatever that is. Maybe a little big to stick in your pocket, but certainly something you can carry around, do whatever you want on. Yep. Full-blown computer, which means you can have all the music you want and all the everything else you want.
And some of that's common in any industry. I can't buy a Ford with a rocket launcher in it. Darn it.
Darn it. I'll guarantee you there's a second. There's an aftermarket.
Yeah. And I still can't buy a jetpack of any flavor.
I know it. Where is my flying car? I want it right now.
Edward Mahler's working on it.
A lot of people are working on it. Unfortunately, when it comes, it's going to take gas. And I don't know that I'm willing to, get even lower mileage than I'm getting now. My car is 10 years old. And trust me, it sucks gasoline. So I'm not sure I want to spend even more. So I want a flying car that runs on, what was it, Mr. Fusion?
Yeah, Mr. Fusion. Home fusion reactor. Yep.
Exactly. Throw a few trash beer cans in there, and
they use stale beer for fuel. But there's no stale beer where us four are involved. It's yes. all consumed.
Or what? No, Back to the Future. Flux capacitor.
The flux capacitor.
They ran on garbage.
Well, yeah, it made time travel possible, but it was the Mr. Fusion home generator in the back that powered the 2.21 gigawatts. Gigawatts, he pronounced it.
He pronounced it gigawatts, which was so very wrong. It's like all the people who pronounce it zoology. It's zoology. Look it up.
Kilometer or kilometer?
Yes. Are you English or American? All right, back to the phones. Our next caller.
Often or often.
Exactly. Our next caller is Jonathan. From, shockingly, Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jonathan. What's your question?
Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Big listener. I have a question. I'm looking at buying an iMac 20-inch.
Yeah.
I think it's a 2.0 gigahertz, the new model with Leopard when it comes out. My question is, I right now run Linux.
Yep.
Solely. I don't run any Windows. And I'm concerned about the lip down I might see with OS X versus running Barrel.
Barrel is beautiful, and it's one of the things that I instantly got used to when I went to a Mac. The ability to, immediately, even without Barrel, I got used to the ability to have multiple desktops available to me.
What is Barrel?
But Barrel is a BERYL. It's a gem. And what Barrel lets you do is actually create...
The beryllium sphere?
No, the beryllium cube. It's a cube onto which you map your desktops. So you can spin the cube and see different desktops. And, of course, it doesn't have to be a cube. It could be an octagon. I don't know what that... Actually, that would be 10-sided.
Beware the power of the dodecahedron.
Exactly. So you'd have a 12-sided, 20-sided, whatever you wanted to have. And that's what Barrel gives you. So you can, it's cute the way it spins and all that. But what it really means is you can have multiple desktops simultaneously running things. And in fact, you can make the thing transparent. So you could see the back of the video playing another thing. It is so unbelievably cool. Yeah.
Well, that feature is built into Leopard, the next system version, system 10.5, which is due out in October. They haven't said when in October yet. But there are similar products available for Tiger, the current operating system. So you could buy a Mac now and get that or download it for your existing Mac now.
So there you go, Jonathan.
Yeah. So it's when Jobs was first showing it off, it's called Spaces in Leopard. A lot of people, it was sorting, you know, saying, why? I've got a desktop. Why do I want to have multiple desktops cluttered up? And then he started showing off some real reasons. You know, you keep your word processing on one desktop and you keep your graphics on one desktop. So you don't have to interact or mix those different applications and different work modes in a single desktop.
Right. I'm doing that here. I like my browser full screen. I like my terminal program full screen. So I put each of those on their own separate desktop, and it's very easy. I use the Alt keys. I mapped the Alt keys. So Alt 3 brings me to my browser. Alt 2 brings me to my terminal program at work. Alt 1 brings me to my email program, and I'm done. So, yeah, Jonathan, I completely understand your need for this. It will be in the next version of the Macintosh operating system. So as long as you are willing to and capable of waiting for that.
Or install one of the third-party programs into a current Mac.
So you can get your Mac now, enjoy it the way it is, and then either add a third-party program that you'll have to remove when you install Leopard. Is that it?
Yeah.
Or you just wait for Leopard to get that. That makes some sense? I can't hear him.
No, he's gone.
Oh, he's gone. Okay, yep. Well, that would explain it then. That would explain why I can't hear him. That's one of the things that I fell in love with Linux.
This is a Sun thing from 30 years ago,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. Well, we all stole from Xerox PARC.
Xerox.
And Sun did it.
They're really kicking themselves in the butt.
They did. They tried, 10 years ago, they tried to sue Apple for some ridiculous amount of money, and the judge said, well, you waited 20 years too long.
Yeah exactly. But the thing is that if you search the net for Java desktop, Sun Java desktop, you will find a video about all of the great things that the Java desktop does. And it's now part of Novell, I think. The Java desktop has all of the things that you can now find on the Mac and on Linux. And they did it, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 7 years ago? And some stuff that you still can't see in other places. One of the things that I really loved was the ability to take any window, flip it over, and write notes on the back. And the notes would follow that thing. So if it was a word processing document, you'd flip it around and on the back put notes about what you wanted to write. If it was a website, you could flip it around and put notes about that website. And then the next time you brought up that website, you know, the note followed the website, not the browser application. And it was just, it was great. And one of the things that I love showing people on my very, very fast machine at work, I can't do this on my laptop here, but I can create a cube in Barrel, right? I just turned Barrel on. I've got a cube. And then I can take a video and wrap it around two sides and it plays while it's playing. In fact, I can drag it over so it's halfway on one, halfway on the other, and it still plays still perfectly.
Cool.
Yeah. Obviously, you need a very fast machine.
Yeah.
You need a very fast graphics card. That's, you know, really more the high-end gamer Alienware style machine than it is the normal. I certainly can't do it on this laptop. But even on a general laptop, as long as it's got a good 2D graphics thing, I can turn on desktop effects. So like on a Mac, when you bring up a menu, it wobbles into existence. And when you move a screen, move a window, it wobbles as it goes and kind of flows along and then wobbles to a stop and all of that stuff. So we've been able to do that for a while on this, too. So one of the things that I really, really like about Linux is the multiplicity of choices of things to do that with.
Nick, I just came across earlier this past week, the website is called screencast.ubuntu.com, and they're doing one video per day for the month of September. You can get, apparently it's going to be, when they finish, everything you need to know to get started with Ubuntu, and I'm starting to watch that.
Yep. You're right. I should have mentioned that. screencast.ubuntu.com, every day something new.
I'm looking for it. Oh, plural?
Yeah. Screencast.ubuntu.com.
There we are.
There you go.
On the link list.
Screencasts. And it's on the link list now, so you don't even have to remember that. We're going to take it. We got some folks on the phone. We'll get to them when we come back. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 21 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. Our next caller is Al from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Al. What's your question?
Very simple question. I just got my first computer. I'm 84 years old.
God bless you.
One of my neighbors was showing me how to run it. He touched the screen. It's a 19-inch widescreen digital flat, and he put a smudge on it. And I've asked everybody, how can I wipe it off? And they all said, don't touch it. Don't touch it. You can't have moisture in the cloth. You can't have...
All right. Here's the best way to do it is...
Yeah, do not use a window cleaner like Windex, because that can damage the coating.
Oh.
Yeah. I use... Get like an old t-shirt and just use some warm water on it. Just, you know, spritz it with some warm water.
Not the screen.
You spray the cloth and then lightly wipe it off. It'll that way the warm water on the cloth, because the oil's in your hand, it'll kind of, using cold water just kind of hardens it. Whereas by putting warm or hotter water, it sort of softens it up and you just rub lightly. You don't have to, you know, grind it in there. Just, you know, lightly do it.
And you don't want to be, you don't want it to be wet enough that it drips.
Oh, right. Oh God.
Just moist.
Al, do you wear eyeglasses?
Yes.
Do you have eyeglass cleaner and a proper eyeglass cloth?
Yes.
Use those.
I was told by a guy in India, you know, I called in.
Sure.
He says use a muslin cloth. What's he talking? What the hell's muslin?
Muslin is a linen, a very soft.
Yeah. Linen. That's the thing. You want it to be soft, not
a cotton t-shirt works.
Yeah,
good.
Cotton t-shirt works. The eyeglass cleaner stuff works good.
You can get specific monitor cleaner. iClear is a big brand, but a lot of companies sell monitor cleaner and a chamois cloth that's very soft, because you don't want to scratch the coatings either.
I was also told a chamois cloth was good, so I was ready to buy a chamois cloth, and it says in there there's oil in this cloth to preserve it.
Right.
I thought, holy crap, there's oil in this, I can't use it.
Right. Here's what you really want to do. Go to any one of the computer type stores.
Yes.
And you can buy a screen cleaning kit. It includes the spritz, it includes the cloth.
But don't spritz the screen. Always spritz the cloth.
Right, and then wipe the cloth on the screen. That way you avoid dripping down into the electronics.
But they were all saying you can't have moisture on anything.
Yeah. No, yes, that, you can.
If well, it's the right stuff, which right. you get in a yeah. screening in a screen cleaning kit, then okay. you're fine.
Oh, is that right?
The yeah. key is moisture, not wetness.
Yeah. All right. I always, and I've been doing this for years, I always spray the cloth, wipe it on the screen, and I've never destroyed a screen yet, and I've been doing it for more years.
It's
than
the
I
same with, for example, DVDs. We have a spritzer for the DVD cleaner yeah. and a cloth for yeah. that. When I do it, it's and you clean it and you're done. With my daughter, she's like, she's getting ready to drip the stuff all over the.
You know, start wiping it, let it absorb all the moisture.
Yeah, not quite that much, it. Honey. So it's the same thing with the computer. Spritz the cloth. Then wipe the screen with the cloth, and you should be fine.
We just got some stuff for getting scratches out of CDs and DVDs. You know, some sort of a cream right, that you rub onto it. Basically, where the scratch on the disc is, you kind of even it out, so it's not a scratch anymore. It's just a little indentation. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, sure. My pleasure. The other thing that we need to be aware of course, is that if you're going to use a T-shirt... Make it an old, many times washed T-shirt.
With
obviously not a new T-shirt, and with nothing written on it.
No label on it, no decal or iron on. You also use a sleeve or something.
Right,
that
cut
has
the back off if it's empty or whatever. Yeah. But that's the way it needs to be.
Yep. I'm going to say all the new Macs come with a little chamois cloth to clean the screen off like that.
Right.
And I probably should also mention that the Apple Store in Eastview Mall is closed for renovations. So don't go there looking to buy a computer.
Right.
Come to our store.
Of course, right.
Come to Mac Ave. You know, we're 3 miles from the mall, right down 96 to 251. So it's been interesting because we've gone to the mall. We've got a sign up at the Apple Store and directions to our store. And people keep going there and seeing the big black plastic over in the store's closed. And we can just see the disappointment in their face.
Yep.
And so we hand them a business card and send them over to us.
That's the way it should be. All right, our next caller is Walter from Greece, New York. Welcome, Walter. What's your question?
Well, guys, especially maybe you, Nick, I'd like you to kind of look into the crystal ball to see what about the future of Linux, especially in dealing with older equipment. Let me give you my example. Right now, we're using Ubuntu Long-Term Care 6.06 and on an IBM 600X laptop.
Right.
Everything works great. Marvelous.
Yep.
So we decided we'll go up to see about Spicy Fawn. And suddenly, well, we got on this, as the screen comes up, says, oh, your BIOS, well, we don't know maybe if we really can use it. Then it does come up, the modem software, the Win modem software doesn't work. Nothing
right.
works at all.
Right.
You know, so I'm just kind of puzzled as to, you know, we still have a couple of years left with LTC.
Right.
But what do you see? Is the Linux community still out there saying, hey, we love old machines, you know, we'll still somebody going to be out there, you know, some distro going to say, hey, we can still do support for old machines?
Well, most of the support that I find under Linux is for older machines.
Okay.
The hardware that's available on the new machines, for example, we just got a bunch of new laptops in at work, and the video card is so new that, in fact, there's only one driver available from Intel for XP, and there isn't even a Vista driver yet. But, you know, it'll take a while for the community to actually bring out a driver for that. Now, on the other hand, you're right. I've got an older laptop that I'm using here. Everything works perfectly. Everything works perfectly except the built-in camera.
Nick, could you define what you mean by an older computer, please?
Well, anything. Well, yeah,
months.
Right. This one happens to be a year old, which is older, but actually 2 years old. But 3 years old, 4 years old, 5 years old, that's where you can find mostly the drivers work. The problem with laptops in general is unless it's a very popular brand, it's likely that no Linux person wrote the driver for it.
And most laptops are also proprietary to
right.
cram pieces into such a small case that it's difficult for generic drivers.
Right. Now, I have a laptop from Lenovo. It's a tablet PC. Not only does everything work as a regular machine, but it works as a tablet. I can switch it around and it does all that stuff. It's even got a fingerprint reader that works perfectly. Every single piece of it works. And that's brand new. But it's because at that point, a group of people bought them and wrote the code.
Okay.
So what you're looking at is, and in particularly with Ubuntu, I think, and I don't really know, but I think the way this works is with the LTS long-term support right. versions, which is 6.06,
right.
and will be the next version, will also have a long-term support thing. They're going to support that for 5 years and make sure that every conceivable driver is in there. The interim ones, like Feisty Farm, just 704, that's the way they do that is the year, 7, and the month, 04. The theory is there'll be another one out next month, 710.
Okay.
But the point is that the way that works is long-term support has everything but the kitchen sink in it, and the interim ones don't necessarily because they're more interested in making the newer stuff work.
Okay. Great. So this way, then, I could look forward to, after this runs out the LTS, I can look forward to another supported LTS OS.
Yes, there will be long-term support versions every couple of years.
One of the things that I would worry about, and I do a little bit on our side, is that Windows and the Mac initially were lean, small OSs. And in the first case of the Mac, you know, you ran in 128K of RAM and a 400K floppy disk fit your OS, your app, and your data. Now we need big and powerful machines, and it's the creeping featureitis over the years. They try to add more and more cool new things to the operating system, which requires newer and newer hardware,
right?
Which is frustrating for customers who want to run the new stuff on their old computer and can't.
Much of the problem with all of that, and I know particularly with Linux, is the number of drivers that have to be available to be able to run equipment. Now, on the other hand, a guy who used to work for me, who is now gone and did not teach me how to do this, I have to learn somewhere, is he had an entire Linux system that booted up in like 10 seconds and had only the drivers he needed and the apps he wanted.
Whoa.
Boom. Really, and it's all, and he spent weeks slim because he was doing it in between his real work for me. Weeks slimming it down, and it booted in 10, maybe 15 seconds.
Right, and that's why in Windows and the Mac, they come on DVDs, the operating system. It takes an hour to load. You know, if you do a detailed log, you'll see it loading thousands of drivers.
Right.
And then Windows, it's even worse because you've got hundreds of thousands of computer configurations.
Right, and the same is true of Linux. But you can pare that down if you know what you're doing and create a very, very slim, very quick launch thing. That's why Linux is becoming so popular for cell phones, for PDAs.
Well, Symbian has been a Linux OS on cell phones for years.
Yep. I don't know of an ebook reader that doesn't run Linux in one form or another, and it's because you can pare it down so small if you only need specific drivers.
One of the things you can do on your Mac is kind of an interesting feature of the Mac is the multilingual ability. You know, by default, it comes with 20 different languages, Eastern European, Western European, Asian.
Right.
You can, as does
Linux.
Right. You can run it in Cherokee if you want, which is interesting. If you don't want, that's a lot of overhead. So one of the tricks that we've learned is that when you're installing OS X on a machine, go into custom install and uncheck all those languages. And you save about 45 minutes of install time. But if it's already installed on your machine and it comes pre-installed on every Mac, then there's a program called Delocalizer, and I'll have a link up for it shortly, that will go through your computer and remove all of those extra languages. So now the OS could boot faster, applications can launch faster, it doesn't have to load all these extra languages. Now, one of the interesting side effects is that I get junk mail in perfectly formed Chinese. I get junk mail in perfectly formed Russian, and
I can't
read any of it. But
Well, the same thing is true under Linux. If you go to user share locale, you'll find a whole bunch of languages. User shell I18, user share I18, and you'll find the same thing. And that does. You're right. It makes it easy if you are multilingual at all. Or if you're interested in, seeing things correctly in foreign languages, but if you want a smaller install, you can get rid of all of those things, and they're gone. This reminds me of the time years ago. I hadn't even touched a Mac in like 3, 4, 5 years, and a woman came to me and said, I need help with my computer. And as I sat down at it, she says, oh, and by the way, it's in Chinese.
Oh, jeez.
Yep.
And I kind of remembered where I thought the thing
the menus are in the same position.
Yeah, that was the only thing that saved me.
Yep.
And I actually did fix her machine. I finally got to say, now which one of these says yes? And she pointed, I clicked that, and we were on our way. But without that, I don't know. It was just, thank God it was all in the same place.
Well, I had a customer once, and we installed Arabic on his computer.
Everything's flipped.
Oh, yeah, it's all right to left. Well, then there were two things that came out, left to right, two things that came out interesting. One is that he had learned all the technical jargon in English. Right. So he's reverse translating. Oh, that's what that word means. And then second, he got mad because it was Saudi Arabic and he was Jordanian.
Right. Right.
And apparently there's enough of a difference.
There is. Not only is there enough of a difference, but in certain cultures, it can be insulting. For example, a friend of mine is a translator. She runs a company that translates things, multiple languages, whatever it is. And she says, we have special people for special things. For example, in German, you can speak up to someone, you can speak down to someone, or you can speak to someone as an equal. Which do you use in technical manuals?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good question. You know, and they had to discover all of that before they knew which voice to use. And the same is true, similar things in other languages. Yep.
I used to work for a translation company years ago, translating mostly Xerox copier manuals. And they wanted all of the manuals in every language to look the same. So on page 6, it was the same in every language. But German is big.
Yeah.
German words are very long. So we had to make the font so small to make the pages work out right. And you can't hyphenate German very much at all.
No, that's exactly right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites. This is 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, it's Sound Bites. All right, I think we've had enough of us. Let's talk to Brian from Rochester. Welcome, Brian. What's your question?
I've got an iPod that I got probably 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And I have a cord that runs from my car stereo deck into the iPod.
Yep.
And it will no longer play music through the stereo, but it will import files and stuff. I was wondering if you know what I should do, either call Apple or...
Can you listen to stuff through the headphone?
I haven't yet because I went out of town and I was just planning on using it and I didn't have any.
Yeah, try listening through the headphone jack. Also, do you have other dockable speakers that use that docking connector at the bottom?
I don't, but I tried using it with an FM transmitter, and it won't work that way either.
Yeah, it sounds like maybe one of the pins on the docking connector that transfers audio is malfunctioned or bent.
Now, you had this plugged into a docking connector in your car?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, unplugging and unplugging that docking connector, if you're not exactly straight on, you can bent a pin. If you're
Good news is then if the iPod is fine. It's just that little connector on the car.
There could be the connector on the iPod itself.
Sure it's the connector on the iPod itself.
Yeah, if it's the male end or the female end. Does it transfer files through through your computer, through iTunes, when it's docked to the computer?
Yep, right before I use it I put some more stuff on it, and it worked just fine.
So you don't know...
Well, it's a 30-pin connector, so the data and transfer pins are okay, but maybe the audio pin is not. If you're really, really lucky, you might be able to straighten that pin, but it's almost a microscopic pin. If the iPod is still under warranty... You can go on Apple's website, and they have a request iPod service page, and get the iPod fixed. Don't say anything about a pin being bent, because that would not be covered under warranty.
Okay.
If the iPod is out of warranty, it's usually, you know, an out-of-warranty repair on an iPod is about as much as a new iPod is.
Okay.
Which is a little annoying, but you can get a brand new iPod now.
Yeah. You're right.
Yeah, if you're also really, really handy with a soldering iron, you could take the iPod apart and unsolder that connector and solder a new one
on. I'm not sure how handy it would have to be.
That would be really bad.
One.
Yeah. Yeah, we've done screen upgrades and hard drive upgrades on iPods, battery upgrades. But when you get right down to the logic board,
that's getting hairy.
Yeah, it's so small a connector and so tight of tolerances, it probably isn't very easy.
Right. All right, sorry, Brian. Good luck. Our next caller is David from Walcott, New York. Welcome, David. What's your question?
I had my PC booted up, and my screen went blank at the same time. I had a power surge glitch or something through it, and then the PC died, but the hard drive light stayed on.
Okay.
I did replace the power supply, and I got it to boot back up.
Mm-hmm.
And the hard drive light still stays on. And if I have any apps running, then if I leave it, it crashes. And I get no response from keyboard or mouse or anything. But what I do is I unplug the power supply whenever I shut the computer down.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I go to use it again, I'll plug the power supply back in and then boot the machine back up, and it runs fine. It will still even run fine if I close out all the apps and let the screen go into screensaver mode, and I can still bring it out of the screensaver mode. But if I, like I said, if I have any apps running at the time and it goes into screensaver mode, then it crashes and I can't get any response. And I just have to unplug it and replug it back in.
What later. Operating system are you running?
Windows XP Home.
Have you tried installing XP Home over itself again?
No.
I might start with the possibility that he's got a bad memory chip somewhere. I mean, if the system dies when he's running an app, that's using a different area of memory than the operating system.
Well, so I'm going to question the whole system right now because you play, you know, he's already replaced the power supply and this is doing it. That's why I say the cheaper way right now is this could wind up nickel and diming him to death by tracing down the parts if he doesn't do the, you know, the
MemTest 86 is free.
Yeah, there you go. There's a good one.
Right. So if you go to memtest86.com, download that, stick it on a CD or a DVD, or even just run it off of the operating system itself. That'll at least tell you if there's a problem with the memory. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Reich, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 49 minutes after the hour. Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 53 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Back to the phone. Our next caller is Chuck from Alba. Welcome, Chuck. What's your question?
Hi there. Having a problem trying to mirror a hard drive with an HP DC7700. It's an 80 gig SATA drive, and I have an identical 80 gig SATA drive, and it's telling me that it won't let me do it. It's grayed out.
What operating system are you running?
Oh, XP Pro.
And what program are you mirroring with?
Yeah.
I'm trying to use what's built into it.
There is nothing built into Windows, is there?
You'd have to see if the motherboard supports that RAID.
Okay. It has RAID on the BIOS.
Well, then in there you can set up the mirroring.
Okay. Yeah, there's nothing built into Windows. The Mac OS has RAID 0 and RAID 1 built into software.
When you go into computer management, there's a grayed out thing that says add mirror, and there's directions for doing that.
Right. Yeah, well, you can't add a mirror.
XP Pro has that.
And you can't add it to your currently running OS. You can only do it to two other disks, right?
Yeah, it's got to be set up before.
Right, before you install an OS on it.
Yeah.
Because you can't change, you can't add a drive to the existing hard drive. You have to create a mirror separately.
So you have to basically have two blank hard drives and partitioning.
From day one.
Okay.
All right.
Now there's another form of RAID that's getting popular called JBOD, just a bunch of disks. And one of the advantages there is you can add another disk to your JBOD RAID and without reformatting the rest of the RAID.
Right.
Well,
you have to have software or hardware that can do that.
And if you're really worried about, you know, copying the drive, you can run like Ghost that'll create a mirrored image.
Right. If you're using
that other drive.
If you want to use it as a backup.
Yeah.
A lot of people mistakenly try to run a RAID mirror as backup. And it isn't backup. It's real-time data protection. If a hard drive fails, the other hard drive takes over. Right.
Yeah.
But if you delete a file accidentally or a file gets corrupted, it will get corrupted on the mirror, too.
Yep.
So you still want to have a backup. Now, using a cloning program like Ghost on the PC or Carbon Copy Cloner on the Mac, you can clone your hard drive to an external second hard drive and then take that away, fire safe, you know, another room, something not. That's a nice backup because then if something does happen to your main drive, you've got that second drive to recover from.
Now, here's a perfect example. I just went to, I was looking for mirroring on XP, and I got to a site that's Israeli. Most of it's in English, but there is one menu option that's all in Israeli, whatever, in Hebrew. It's all completely legible Hebrew if I spoke the language or read the written language. That goes back to what we were talking about earlier with language problems.
I just found one in Italian.
All right. Well, that's hardly a challenge. Our next caller is...
It's in English, but it's .il, which is Italy, right?
Right. no. IT is Italy. IL is Israel. That's where I was. George in Fairport is our next caller. Welcome, George. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Thanks. I got a Kodak digital camera that I can take movies or videos on, but when I try to run that from the flash card on the Windows Media Player... it doesn't interface very well. I have to slow the speed down. It's got a .mov file extension, And when I try to change it to .WMV, it doesn't run it at all. You got any?
You can't change the file extension. The .MOV is a QuickTime movie. You would need a different program to convert the video into a different format. So just changing the extension will never work.
Now, so I can run it on QuickTime, then, is what you're saying.
You have to run it on QuickTime.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
Yep.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, that's one of the interesting problems with things like that is...
It may even be an MPEG-2, because a lot of... there's two big issues happening now, especially with the high-definition digital camcorders. There's a new video format called AVC HD, or your camera can record in MPEG-2.
Right.
You have to have the right software to be able to decode that, and usually that comes with the camera. But it's becoming an issue of yet another standard.
Yeah,
you know, we were used to DV, and now we've got HDV, and now AVC HDs. So everyone comes up with a better and better quality, they think, which is not compatible with anything else.
Right, exactly right. Have I got time for a quick another? Oh, I don't have more time. Look at me. We're out of time.
Let me just add this. If the gentleman wants to convert from a QuickTime MOV file to a WMV, MPEG StreamClip is an application I use to convert video files. And
so
we'll
it
do
plays
that
it in one format and converts it on the fly to another?
It can, yes.
Yeah. MPlayer and under Linux does that. It
Visual
converts from
Hub.
Anything to anything.
Visual Hub is another great converter program. Converts anything to anything.
Right. All right. It looks like we're done for another week. I apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. Call earlier and more often. Thanks to all of you who did call in. Next week, call in earlier and more often. We're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Chris Wright, who was very kind and again, has generously donated his time, his talent, and his ability to come and do this for us to record the show.
Always happy to, Nick. Thanks for the opportunity.
It's my pleasure. And Rob Linton, who donated his time and
you're on camera.
I'm Nick Francesco. Yeah, he was hiding behind the thing so nobody could see
it. No, there's one in
Israel. No, he was hiding behind the box so that it couldn't be seen. It's 59 minutes after the hour. It's Sound Bites.